Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Midtown Atlanta, it's time for Health Connect South Radio. Now here's your host, C.W. Hall.
What's up, everyone? It is C.W. Thank you for joining us today, 70th episode of Health Connect South Radio. We appreciate you making time to join us. If you have not done so already, make sure you get over to healthconnectsouth.com and register for the upcoming Health Connect South event. It's going to be held September 21st at the Georgia Aquarium downtown. It's an awesome venue. They had the event there last year, and it was a lovely place to be, many connections to be had. So if you've not done so already, go to healthconnectsouth.com, register for the event, and make sure you use the promo code RadioX and you'll get a discount off of your registration fees. And make sure you tell folks about it so that they too can take advantage of being Health Connect South Radio show listeners. And this morning, we've got one of the folks that's going to be joining us for the upcoming Health Connect South event, president and co-founder of ShareForCures.com, Joshua Mann, joining me remotely today. Didn't make it into the studio, but we'll catch up with him when he gets here in town in actually just a few short weeks. Welcome, Josh.
Thank you for having me.
For the folks who aren't aware of Share for Cures, talk about what this platform is all about.
Certainly. So we are a 501c3 nonprofit. We were founded about 2 years ago with the hope that we could make a meaningful difference in the research that's being done using real-world data. So much of research today is based off of gold standard clinical trials. There is this idea of a perfect patient that can be studied. They are usually younger than the average patient. They usually don't have any comorbidities. And pharma and research organizations spend a great deal of time trying to recruit these perfect patients to these clinical trials. And they're usually only able to recruit them in small numbers. To be honest with you, the end results of these clinical trials, they're very rarely replicatable in the real world. So when a new drug hits the market, or when anything becomes kind of consumable by the general public, the results that we saw in clinical trials generally aren't what we see in the real world. And so we set out to find a way to aggregate and collect as much real-world data that exists, medical records, wellness data, social data, aggregate it all in one place, allow an individual to choose what data they're willing to share with researchers, obviously, because people have privacy sensitivities. So we really wanted to put individual at the center of this, giving them complete control over their sharing capabilities. Really use this to find a low-cost way to very quickly form research in a real-world setting. So with the hopes of, driving down the cost of research, aggregating and utilizing data that already exists that's not being utilized, just really trying to help the general public. We also saw that a lot of organizations, research entities, patient advocacy groups, et cetera, were spending a lot of money trying to aggregate very small subsets of data for research purposes. So these are typically done in registries and the like, where they will say, we have a question that we want answered, and we're going to recruit many patients as we can afford to help us answer this question. And they collect a very small subset of data about these patients at great cost. And for a lot of research entities, for a lot of nonprofits, it's very difficult for them to achieve their goals in that kind of setting. They oftentimes have to pay technology companies large amounts of money to do this, and the results that they get are minimal at best, usually. So we wanted to be be a nonprofit and provide this platform for little to no cost to organizations out there trying to do research. And we really, we also thought that being a nonprofit would certainly help explain our mission to the public, that, you know, we are not out there to sell their data, monetize their data, mm-hmm. but they can trust us with it. So that's really why we founded the organization and, you know, what we set out to do.
So when you look at the type of, I guess, subject, if you will, if CW contributes his wearable device data and however I would do so through my EMR, the record that I have with my physician, if I'm willing to contribute that information and become available to be included in studies, how does the rest of the science world, if you will, view this source in, if you will? You know what I'm saying? Do they decry the quality of this participant versus a quote-unquote randomized double-blind volunteer to participate in some form or fashion? It would seem to me that in some ways this is actually going to be, like you described, a more real subject.
Exactly right. So, you know, I would say between 5 and 10 years ago, we started to see a little bit of a paradigm shift with researchers. Now, I've spent 20 years in the health IT industry, primarily working on big data projects. And for the first half, at a minimum, if not the first 15 years or so, researchers, academic institutions, physicians, everyone said, you know, one, EHR data is junk. You can't use it. And to some degree, they were right about that, in the sense that EHR data is collected for billing purposes and it contains a lot of errors, et cetera. It's not a true representation of what's actually occurring to that patient when they're in the care of a physician. In addition, no one was really able to understand the value of social data, and the apps and fitness devices really, you know, aside from tracking how many steps you took, there wasn't a lot there, you know, 10, 15 years ago or so. And, you know, so there was definitely a lot of pushback then mm-hmm. about that, but we've seen a change in the industry where people are starting to see the value in this type of data, especially if you're able to standardize it, normalize it across all of these various sources and have it presentable in a way that researchers can easily mine. You know, what we found early on was, you know, a lot of folks were saying, oh, well, that's great, you're bringing in all of this data, but is it usable? Is it interpretable? Mm-hmm. You know, I think that's one of the things that we kind of have in our secret sauce, is our ability to do that automatically and with ease.
So are you using some sort of algorithms then, I guess, written into the platform that helps you do that?
Correct. Yeah, we have an artificial intelligence driven engine that helps us interpret, standardize, and normalize the data. This is, and one of the biggest problems in healthcare data in general is that although there's a lot of it out there, we still have semantic and syntactic interoperability issues. Data from one source is really just the data from that one source, meaning that it's very difficult to compare across sources. And so, you know, it's a necessity to be able to interpret and understand the data in that way.
So when we're looking at how you're able to foster research, it makes sense to me that you're going to be able to have a wide range of bioinformation from these patients as they start to populate their profiles. But I'm curious, how are you, it would seem like a massive challenge, more than finding traction within the research community, it would seem getting people to put their information into the system to be participants and to house their information. How do you go about tackling that side of things?
It certainly is, you know, and it's funny you say this because I actually worked on a project about 5 years ago or so where the initial goal was to have patient-donated data be the driver. And the organization ultimately said, you know, we feel that patient-donated data, it's just going to be a trickle of data coming in, and we really need to be drinking from the fire hose. And, you know, I felt at the time that just wasn't true, that, you know, if you provide people with the right motivation, the altruistic, philanthropic type of motivation, if you allow them to feel that they can trust you, certainly a lot of individuals are distrustful of organizations using their private personal data for monetary gains. If you have a level of trust within the individual community, you know, we think that a lot of those barriers come down. Now, we also realize that, you know, what we've seen is, you know, you have a small group of very motivated individuals. These are, you know, individuals like patient advocates and so forth. And they are very, very quick to sign up immediately. These, you know, they go around to conferences and they speak about the need for this type of system. And so the highly motivated individuals are certainly there. But the question really is, how do we get the rest of them? And one of the things that we've developed that we try, you know, that we hope will make this as easy as possible for everyone, that's one of our main motivators, is we've developed something called the share button. And this is similar to Blue Button, except it works with something called OAuth. So OAuth is what's used when you click on the button on a website that says log in with Facebook or log in with Twitter. And what OAuth allows us to do and what the share button allows us to do is we can place this button on any website, on any app, and with one click, a user can opt in to share the data that's contained on that website or in that app with researchers. So they don't have to do anything else except click that button. If they don't have an account, they have to create an account with us. And then after that, that's it. That's all they need to do. Now, they certainly have the option to go to our website and customize their sharing settings. But if they don't want to, that's not a problem. So we've really tried to make this as simple as possible. So if you're in your Fitbit app and you see our share button with a little description that says, you know, share your data with researchers and here's how it'll be used, all you have to do is click that button. And so we think that having that ease of use for people to opt in will really help turn that you know, perceived trickle into the fire hose.
Talking with president and co-founder of ShareForCures.com, it's a digital platform that allows individuals to aggregate and store their personal health information, including information that you would get from wearable devices like Fitbits, for example, smartwatches, other things that are counting steps and other activity. You can begin to populate a profile with information from a number of those different sources, up to and including apparently information from your electronic health record, for example, from your physician's office, and make this available to the scientific community in a de-identified way such that your health information might actually contribute to the advancement of some research just because you were able to and willing to share this information. And Josh, I'm curious, are you then reaching out to the app makers of different types, like the Fitbit people and Under Armour and others that are developing health and wellness related apps and platforms to say, hey, let us put your button on there? Is that what you're doing?
That's exactly right. Yes. And you know, when we first conceived of the button, we actually went around the community very rapidly and evaluated the interest from other organizations. And there was certainly a pause from some organizations that said, well, wait a minute, you know, we're a personal health record company. Are you competing with us?
Right.
And, you know, our immediate answer is absolutely not. I mean, by default, we do store data. We are a repository of data. But we're certainly not trying to compete with what any of these apps or personal health records are trying to do. The button itself was meant to leverage the infrastructure that they have, so that way we can make sharing of data with researchers as easy as possible. And I think that, you know, we've signed a lot of agreements so far in preparation for the launch of the share button. And, you know, I think that just the sheer number of these agreements that we've been able to sign is really a testament to, you know, the fact that the industry is feeling comfortable with our model and our concept. So
I'm curious to see how it might take a minute, I think, for people to wrap their arms around the fact that, you know, if I'm understanding correctly, my information is de-identified. It's not CW Hall anymore once it gets out. What they pull from your site is not CW Hall. It's just 48-year-old man with history of XYZ and so forth.
Correct. Or it could be even less than that. So, for example, we have extremely granular level share settings. So if you wanted to, you could say, I don't want any of the data that you're collecting about me shared with researchers unless it was related to my breast cancer, or I don't want any data being shared unless it was about my diabetes care. You could also say, any data that you have on me before 2012, I don't want shared with researchers. Or you could say, I'm fine with you guys using all of my data, including my identifiable data, and that is an option. You can opt in for that if you really want. but I don't want my HIV status being out there.
Mm-hmm.
And so you could drill in, pick and choose specific data elements that you never want out there, or you could open it up and say, I'm fine with everyone knowing everything about me, so to speak. And it's, when I say everyone, it's not everyone in the world. It's researchers that go through a vetting process. They themselves go through an IRB review process and a scientific committee review process. So there's these are vetted and validated research initiatives that we are trying to facilitate that, you know, if your data is a match for, we will share the data with them for.
Did I understand correctly that I am able to submit in some form or fashion electronic health record information from my physician's office?
Correct, correct. At this point in time, we're actually able to pull in EHR data from about half the hospitals in the country.
Is that based around particular EMR companies then?
No, it's not. So what we actually do is we have interfaces with the personal health records that are exposed by the hospitals. So when you connect your electronic health record with us, we ask that you log into your personal health record in order to make that OAuth connection. So again, similar to log in with Facebook, log in with Twitter, you know, you are on a website, it asks you to log in with Facebook. What you're actually doing is you're connecting Facebook's website with this third party's website. And that's similar to the way that we do it. So we have OAuth, we ask you to connect us with your personal health record, and we're able to download all of the data or just the data you let us download from that personal health record.
So I'm going to point you at my patient portal.
Correct.
Okay. Well, I can definitely see the value for sure in this type of information. I'm curious about the people that participate in that. Are they I know it's not safe to assume that older patients, for example, have an aversion to technology. I know that to the contrary, many of them are actually surprisingly tech savvy when they get things like smart devices and things like that. At least the folks in my family, the older folks in my family, took to it very quickly once they were given access to like a iPhone, for example. So my question was going to be around, does the participant in such a platform as this trend toward more healthy?
Yes and no. So I'll say that one of the key aspects to our platform is that we allow completely healthy individuals to sign up and join and contribute their data.
Mm-hmm.
What a lot of research studies don't have are healthy controls. What there's also not a lot of research out there in the world on is the progression into disease. We actually look at, you know, healthy individuals as a real positive for us.
Yeah, in the long run, I can certainly see you will have then a period of time during which they were free of an illness, but now they have it. And is there anything in the data that can be seen as a precursor to that?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. But in terms of, you know, the demographics of, you know, the types of individuals that contribute their data, you know, as I said earlier, there's obviously those initial highly motivated individuals, usually motivated for personal reasons, either they are living with an illness or a close family member is. So those are usually the first ones that we see, you know, followed by, I think, what's kind of a typical demographic skew, which is well-educated Caucasians, you know, between a certain age range, you know, that are making a certain income bracket and so forth. And we certainly, you know, do get our slew of that. Our challenge, just with any other kind of research initiative, is how do we capture all of the disparate individuals that, you know, have higher aversion rates to joining initiatives like this. And, you know, a lot of that is tackled with, you know, PR and marketing and co-branding initiatives and things of that nature, which hopefully allow us to reach a more diverse population.
What about the third-party payers? It would seem that they would be great sources of data if they would be willing to share it. And obviously that's going to be everybody. I mean, you know, healthy and very sick.
Sure,
and
get you
into some of the data of the subjects you were talking about, the polypharmic or multiple comorbidity patients that are also breast cancer patients or diabetics, whatever, that you can then start to use them in data pools.
So we do not currently seek out payer data or really relationships with payers at all. And it's just not a priority for us at the moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've certainly been approached by payers for a number of different reasons, primarily for actuarial type analysis. So you know, these are individuals that would like to mine the data that we have to understand, you know, how they should be adjusting coverages and risks and so forth.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's not a core purpose for what we do. You know, we're trying to advance research.
But they benefit from research. You know what I'm saying? That's why I'm wondering that's why I would wonder why they wouldn't want to contribute data from their patient sets to be able to accelerate research that could very well save them millions.
Yeah, I mean, so all of our sharing, so to speak, is patient driven. It's up to the individual to connect their accounts that they have to let us have access to their data. You know, individuals.
But that's where I'm going is having those payers engage their members to say, hey, this is available because we're such a cool third-party payer. You know what I'm saying?
Certainly. Yeah, it's
and they get a blue button on their website.
The share button.
Yeah,
share button.
Exactly. Sorry, my bad.
but you know, it's certainly something that, you know, we've had high level conversations about, and I could see the benefit there. You know, it's just not something that we've decided to tackle at the moment.
Understood. What are some of the collaborations and partnerships that you are looking for?
Certainly. So, you know, we certainly, for our share button, we're looking to find as many entities as possible to host the share button, to engage their members, allow their members to, you know, contribute to research. You know, and one of the upsides for individuals that, or for organizations that want to host the button, is we do actually enable bi-directional communication. So an individual who allows SharePortiers to pull data off of their app or website could also authorize us to send other data back to that app or website. So some of these personal health record companies and the like, you know, are looking at ways of easily integrating other data sources, and we can actually facilitate that. You know, we're a nonprofit organization, and we are focused on research. So one of the things that we try to do is partner with research organizations, research institutions, in order to pursue grants and the like, in order to actually carry out the research. So this would be, for example, you know, we would partner with a large university that had a couple of research questions, and we might write a few grant proposals in order to find funding for that research. And then once we receive that funding, carry out that research on behalf of our members.
I've got an introduction to make for you from around that side. I know that you're going to be talking about data in healthcare coming up at the event as we get into looking at trying to tackle some of the top disease states affecting patients around the globe. Can you give some sneak peeks into what your thoughts are around big data? I know I, for one, have long thought that there's definitely the need, there's all these millions of patients out there in electronic health records. There's, in my opinion, there's got to be a way to extract that in a de-identified way such that you can begin to really identify fraud, identify predictive data that would help you tackle things like heart disease, obesity, diabetes, even some cancers potentially. What's your perspective on data in healthcare?
Certainly. So, you know, there's been a lot of progress over the years, certainly as we move towards personalized medicine. You know, we're seeing these large collections of data. So whether it's genomic data or whatnot, they're starting to move down the pipe and be delivered closer and closer to the physician. So what I mean by that is to say that 10 years ago or so, you know, sequencing was a lot less common unless you had a very specific disease, which, you know, physicians already knew, okay, we need to go and get confirmation of this disease, and we do that through sequencing. You know, the physicians would look to a report that said yes or no, basically. But what we're seeing more and more is this large swath of data moving ever closer to the physician. The physician needs to have the ability to understand all of this data and consume it in an easy way. And they're certainly struggling with that. So we're starting to see a lot of this data. It's being collected. It's starting to be made more and more available to individuals and to physicians. But we're still a long way away from really being able to utilize this volume and this variety of data that's being collected. It's in a lot of ways unfortunate, and I'll give one example. So while there is a great amount of data out there, if you have a patient and let's say they have cancer, and you go and you send their tumor biopsy off to be sequenced. Now, depending on what lab you send that to, it's going to depend on what results you get back. And so what I mean by that is labs all have different quality levels. So you may send a piece of that tumor to one lab and they'll come back and say, all right, we see mutation X, Y, and Z. You send it to another lab and they might say, we don't see mutation X, Y, Z. And so we still have a lot of data interoperability issues, if you will. And some of it is so foundational that the typical semantic or syntactic thinking around how do we all communicate in the same way, that's just not going to solve it. We have, you know, very basic data quality issues that prevent us from really ever utilizing all of this data that's being collected for comparison across all people.
Data that's collected at this lab that has this type of equipment then, in a sense, creates a data pool that is more or less, you'd have to almost break that into a factor to be considered, correct? Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
It creates a
subpopulation
of people because, I mean, it's like having a weight scale, right? You're more or less than, you can zero them, but I mean, as much as anything, you're looking for a trend line on that device. And it's the same thing here in some capacity that those patient populations would have a measure of value relative to each other, not necessarily relative to the lab across the street.
That's exactly right. And, you know, that's just one example of some of these core issues that we really have to tackle in utilizing big data in healthcare. And this is so much deeper than, you know, the typical conversations around, you know, syntax and semantics and so forth. And until we do that, once we do that, that's when I believe that we're really going to see the real power of big data in healthcare. Once we're able to truly aggregate and analyze the data across the board, and not have to worry about these core quality issues, you know, we'll really be able to compare Jane Smith to Mary, you know, Davis across the country, and draw meaningful conclusions.
Talk about where folks can get some more information about ShareForCures.com platform and how they might possibly partner with you, whether they're a patient or whether they are one of those either app developers or other organization that might make a good partner for you.
Absolutely. So they're free to go to our website, ShareForCures.org. And on there is contact us information. Our website is currently closed for new individuals to sign up. That will be changing in October. So if you're an individual looking to join and sign up for research, I encourage you to check back in October.
Awesome. If you've not done so already, in the upper left-hand corner of the show page, you'll see the Apple logo there. That'll take you to the iTunes store where the Health Connect South Radio Show podcast lives. Make sure you subscribe to us. That way, each week when the new episode comes out, it's downloaded straight to your device, ready for you to listen whenever it's convenient for you. And we hope you turn around and share this information. One of the big things that Health Connect South is trying to achieve is breaking down the silos, and sharing information like this with your social media networks might just put information in the hands of somebody that means something to you that ends up making a big difference in their life or in the work that they're conducting. So we'll say thank you to all the folks that go to the trouble of clicking share on our behalf. I look forward to meeting you face-to-face at the upcoming event, Josh. I appreciate you taking some time to jump on with me this morning.
Likewise. Thank you.
Make sure that you register at healthconnectsouth.com for the Health Connect South event, September 21st. Use the promo code RADIOX. Get that discount. We look forward to seeing everybody at that event. And Josh, we'll see you there as well. Everybody take care today.